This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the business station. This is Cruise Control, that car show here on BFM. My name is Rich Bradbury. As usual, I'm joined by my two friends and colleagues, Arif Ruse, he's normally the man with the news, and Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my. Say hello, fellas.
Hello.
Hello and good evening, everybody.
Bit of a special show lined up for you today. Of course, we've got some news up at the top of the show, and then we switch over to a tale of two Satrias.
Yeah.
Two Satrias. That's all coming up. Don't go anywhere. And if you want to get in touch with the show, you can tweet us, of course. We're at BFM Radio. And we have an Instagram page, do we not?
Yes, we do. It's at BFM Cruise Control.
Now, what have you got in terms of news? I hear there's a bit of a headache regarding renewing your driving license.
Yeah, you know, a couple of weeks ago, the government said that there will be no more moratorium in terms of your expired road tax and driving licenses. So they told everybody that by the end of September, you have to get all of your road taxes and driving licenses done or you will be fined again.
Oh.
The problem is, obviously, we can't really go to the post office or to JPJ to do all of that easily because of the MCO and COVID, obviously. So they have been telling us to book an appointment with JPJ online to renew your license and road tax. And according to Daniel, it's a pretty horrible experience.
What actually happened, it started with me, actually, because I've got two cars where the road tax is expired and it's third-party road tax. They're old cars. I've been going to the post office for the longest time. And then the post office was closed, so I tried to do it with JPJ, and they said, you got to make an appointment. And when I tried to make an appointment, it just didn't work. So maybe I didn't try hard enough, but never mind. Then the post office reopened, right? And then I went to the post office, and it was a big queue. And then, you know, after a little while, a nice lady came on and said, listen, you know, about 10 o'clock in the morning, she said, for today, we're done. We've got enough people. The rest of you need to go and book an appointment. So you go to the post office website and book an appointment. I said, okay, we'll do that. But I said, you know, my road tax ends in a few days. Will I get an appointment in a few days? She said, well, not at this post office because we're already now taking appointments very quickly. You might need to go to another post office. And then, you know, the problem with another post office is, of course, this one is crowded. The other one will also be crowded, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I can't go into another state. And I don't want to go too far away because then, you know, it'll just be a waste of time. So I'm thinking how to solve this problem. Now, while I'm trying to figure that out, I go to MyEG and MyEG is not responsive, the website. Mm-hmm. Then my colleague, who's trying to renew his road tax, his license, because he wants to drive his car and go back to JB to visit his parents because he's not seen them for so many months. And he puts up this article with his experience and he's really frustrated. So if you read the article on DSF.my, you can see there's a lot of frustration in it. But the funny thing is, and I say the word funny because everybody who responded on the website were having the same problem, but in different situations, in different states. So I thought to myself, you know, because you have 3 months of lockdown, 3 months of non-activity with JPJ and the post office, there's going to be a lot of backlog and there's going to be a lot of urgent cases. And they've got, you know, and everybody has got mine is a priority. Mine is urgent. Mine is life or death. You know, everybody's got that situation, you know?
I'm in the same boat, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah. For my learner's license, yeah.
Oh, yeah. You were supposed to have your test recently, weren't you?
Correct, yes. I was sorry to interrupt you, Daniel. Yeah,
no problem.
Not for my tester, Arif, but when you get your first license, for you guys, it's probably thinking years and years and years ago, but it's only valid for 3 months, and then you have to go and do like the one test over there.
Yes.
And, of course, we got locked down, and so that license of mine expired. And I was like, well, what do I do about it? How do I get it renewed? My instructor at the time was just like, you know, it's okay. There's this moratorium on. There's going to be waiting. Don't worry about it. He called me recently and said, oh, send me your license. I'll then go to the post office on your behalf and do it for you and all of this kind of stuff. And he just called me. He's like, I can't do it. It's so stressful. You're just going to have to wait.
But, you know, I look at this situation. I could be wrong. But I'm very sure they're going to extend the September deadline to October because there is no way they can do this backlog. And even when people, you know, now a lot of people are transacting used cars and old cars and you know, barn finds, you can't get the transfer done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you can't get the new road tax done, and you can't get the new insurance done. So there is definitely going to be a lot of backlog, a lot of frustrated and angry people. But listen, stop blaming the government. I mean, I'm not saying don't blame them.
You know, that's a surprise.
Yeah, but when you had 3 months of no activity, a flurry of activity can't be solved in 1 month.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed.
So I think they should give a delay. I mean, even my older son, he's driving tests and everything has been put on a hold. Till now, money has been paid, but I can't go to the driving school and hammer them. You know, you just have to wait.
Yeah. And, you know, part of the problem is, you know, I should have been aware when it was expiring and I should have chased it up instead of leaving it to the last minute. So it's my fault, really. But there was nowhere open and no way of getting it renewed, of course. So there we go.
And if I'm not mistaken, you know, the fact that you had to visit JPJ website and book an appointment, that system was quite recent. And even now it's not, this is the typical thing with My Sejahtera. You have double bookings. You have suddenly being promised a booking time when there wasn't a booking time to be promised in the first place.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, you know, any the best software system in the world or so will have bugs in it. You know, I've been trying to pay my car summons for 2 months.
What?
Car summons. You know, you can't go to the police station and pay, so you got to pay online. Every time I go into the payment portal, I click pay, the thing hangs. I tried it about like 7-8 times and I said, never mind, I'll just wait for everybody else to pay, then I'll pay.
Right.
But the problem is if I don't pay in time, I'll be blacklisted.
Exactly. But that also sounds like a certain banking app as well. I have the same problem with one of those. I try to log in and check my transactions and my accounts. I'm like, why is this thing hanging? You
okay,
know?
So we're going to Biz Bytes now, okay?
Well, but like you say, every piece of software will have bugs in it. It just so happens that we seem to have a bit more than anybody else right now. Or we feel that way.
Yes. So I want to end by just saying this. Cars do not need a lot of software. We old people also don't want a lot of software. The old ways were the good ways.
Those days when we didn't need computer chips in our cars and
exactly,
we could produce them.
Exactly, exactly. I would have been happy to line up at the post office for 3 hours.
Right. Now, speaking about new cars and things, let's move on, shall we?
Yep.
Just as we finished our show last week, BMW launched the new BMW iX. What it is a BMW X5-sized electric vehicle. And I think we've criticized it a lot in the past when it first got released, about his beaver face and his weird proportions and, you know, plastic cladding everywhere that really doesn't make any sense. But looks aside, it was launched 5 or 6 days ago, and it seemed to have already gotten 100 bookings, which is impressive for, I would say, a highly bespoke car like this, and for such an expensive car like this as well. So for 420,000 ringgit, I guess a lot of people were just into it.
Well, you know, they sent out a press release on this. I think it was their way of, you know, slamming their chest and saying, okay, we proved you guys wrong. We got a sizable number of people who actually won this car. Now, I'm not surprised of the numbers sold, because if you look at it, 420,000 for the starter model, then you build it up to 435, 440, okay?
Yeah.
Now, you buy an X5 hybrid. The person buying the X5 hybrid is probably the same person who's buying this xDrive 40. I'll tell you why. Because if I walked into a showroom today to buy an X5 hybrid, obviously, I have an expat salary like Richard's. You know, I have a big house like Richard. I have sizable, you know, investments and everything else. So this is going to be my third or fourth car. It's not going to be my first car. It's not going to be my primary car, right?
Yeah.
Okay, maybe I have 2 luxury cars at home. That's the worst case. But if I walk into the showroom and I see this electric car and I say, oh, very nice, very different, very exciting. And then what will I say to myself? If for the same amount of money, I get a plug-in hybrid. You know, everybody has it. It's so common on the road. You know, when I go for my big meetings, people are going to say, ah, yeah, you like the other fella, same lah. But if I drive this, I make a fashion statement. I make a business statement that, you know, I'm eco-friendly, I'm carbon neutral and blah, blah, blah. And immediately my company can issue a press release and say the MD has gone carbon neutral, you know? And it's not going to be the car that I'm going to be using every day to travel around. Because why? I know there's charging infrastructure issues and everything else. So I still got my petrol car or my diesel car or whatever else I have at home. But this is going to be my statement, you know?
Yeah. And I sort of agree with that, because I've seen people snapping real life photos of this car. And it actually looks better in the real world rather than what BMW sends us.
In the press photos, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, remember guys, you know, when the Mini launched the electric, first batch, poop, sold out. Second batch, poop, sold out. Now suddenly it's all quiet. You know, there's no press release on how many units are sold. There will always be the early adopters. And who are these? These are fashion, brand conscious, rich people who don't think about anything else except making a statement. So I think I'll wait and see if there's another press release in a month's time saying, oh, we sold so many more cars. Because like even the Porsche Taycan, the first run was really fast. And then, you know, it's now slowing down a little bit because there's only so many rich people out there who can embrace this whole electric vehicle technology at this price point.
That's a fair point. And just talking about the other electric cars on sale, apparently BMW will launch the iX3, which is the electric version of the X3, which looks almost exactly the same. And I think people will like that more than this iX.
Right.
And of course, the BMW i4, which is pretty cool. But in terms of the technicals in the BMW iX, I think some people around the world have already had the chance to drive this car. And what they're pretty much saying is that it's a very normal car. Surprise, surprise. What we get is the xDrive 40 is a mid-range model. It has two motors, all-wheel drive, 322 horsepower. It has a 71 kilowatt hour battery, which is about average in the grand scheme of electric cars. Gets you about 400 kilometers, but mainly what people found with BMWs was their fast charging situation because it's not quite, you know, as quick as Tesla, Audi, Porsche. But 30 minutes to gain about 350 kilometers of range is still quite good.
I'd say.
It feels like a year ago we were complaining about an hour or 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay, but you know, gentlemen, I think we've had this conversation again. It's 30 minutes assuming that the juice is running properly.
Yeah. Of course, as a brand new car or a...
Also because, you know, from TNB.
Oh! But anyway, now what have we got to talk about?
TNB.
Funny that.
So basically in Malaysia, along with this announcement that BMW is launching the first electric SUV in Malaysia, there has been a flurry of news over the past few months and certainly last week about accelerating EV adoption in Malaysia. Alongside BMW announcing this iX car, they have also said that they will be committing to setting up fast chargers along Malaysia's major highways at their dealers as well as malls to support the EV growth in Malaysia. They didn't say how many. They didn't say by when, but...
On the way la.
On the way la.
Easy to say if you don't give a number.
Yeah. Porsche and Shell, you might remember a couple of months ago, they announced something similar. So they announced 12 charging stations along the NSE and this whole like project extended throughout the spine of Southeast Asia, basically.
Yes.
To go all the way up to Bangkok, I think it was.
Yes, and they gave a commitment by 2022 because Shell was working with them as a partnership from Singapore.
So speaking of TNB, they have been joining forces with SoCar, which are a ride-sharing app, who are about to do the same thing as well. They have recently signed an MOU, Memorandum of Understanding, which will see TNB leverage on SoCar's data on vehicle usage and travel behavior. And I think that's a positive move because it's really important to see, you know, the type of trips people need to make.
Where they go, how often,
yeah,
you know,
where they stop,
you know.
SoCar are doing a lot right now. They're teaming up all over the place. They're over in Turkey, they're in Switzerland, they're in Azerbaijan. Lots and lots of these partnerships have been formed all around the world. These guys are really smart right now.
Right. But they're not so noisy as some other startups. Huh?
Mm.
Where are they from?
Good question.
Someone told me Korea.
To be honest, I always thought it was Malaysian.
Well, they have an office in Malaysia. They are running.
They do have an office in Malaysia, yeah.
Okay, doesn't matter. But, you know, wherever they're from, they're doing a good job. They're working with TNB. And the fact that TNB is joining force with them, I was quite surprised because a lot of other companies have talked to TNB. And TNB has been very like, you know, okay, but nothing signed. But now that they're working with SoCar and they've said, yes, we're going to do this, I think there's a serious light at the end of the EV ownership tunnel.
They are, in fact, South Korean.
South Korean.
So South Korean company SoCar has expanded around the globe. They're doing a great job with TNB. So now if they're going to bring in hundreds of EVs, let's guess, since they're South Korean, could it be a Hyundai?
It would make sense to do that.
Yeah, because the Hyundai Kona Electric is a world-class electric car. They've been testing it here for some time. I've spoken to Hyundai Sime Darby, and they've got no comment on all my questions, whether they're going to launch and how much and which model and everything else. But they have a base model running here, and it's been on test for the last year plus. That is estimated at today's exchange rate and tax at 180-odd thousand ringgit. So If SoCar is going to do this, I think they are already planning and they're talking to Hyundai and they're going to bring in these cars, and which will follow with the new Ioniq that's going to come from Singapore.
Here's what you need to do, Daniel. You need to get back to Hyundai,
right,
and do a video conference with them and say to them, look, are you bringing in this car in? You don't need to answer. Just nod your head and then record it.
But how do we show that on radio?
Point them to your website and we say, you want the answer? Check out the website.
Okay, great. I'll work on that.
Ah.
So good news for electric car adoption in Malaysia.
Great stuff. On that note, we should probably take a break. Hmm. Folks, you are tuned in to Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM. My name is Rich Bradbury. As usual, I'm joined by Arif Ruz and Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, it will be all about the tale of two Satrias. Up first, the Satria GTI or a Mitsubishi Mirage Turbo. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Because freedom matters. BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, the business station. My name is Rich Bradbury. This is Cruise Control. I've got Arif Ruz. Say hello.
Hello.
And Daniel Fernandez. Say hello.
Hi and good evening.
My Malaysian friends. Special day just a few days ago. So we've got a special show lined up for you today, and two special heritage cars, one might say. Or one special heritage car, the Satria of all things.
Very special car to Malaysians, definitely.
Yes, absolutely. Tell me about the Satria, Daniel. Come on.
Okay. Satria GTI. I mean, I remember this car being launched. You know, I was still in the business. I was new in the business. And when I test drove it, because I've always driven manual cars, I thought, okay, great, you know. Lotus handling, nice engine, 1.8, just enough power, you know. And Satria at that time was a good-looking hot hatch. You know, it was a good-looking hot hatch. Recaro seats, anything with Recaro seats, you know, gets us all excited. Our hair will be standing on our edges. You know, what hair we have. Anyway, so we thought Satria GTI, great car. And it shared all the mechanicals with its Wira brother, the 1.8 special edition, okay.
Yeah.
But the Satria was lighter, and then of course with the Lotus handling it did a lot better. Now at that time the car was selling for 68,000 ringgit. Now 68,000 ringgit was a lot of money then. Mm-hmm. The car sold well, hotcakes, economy was doing well. It went all around the country. It went overseas. It went to UK. It went to Australia, New Zealand. Even the Australian and the UK press giving it a thumbs up, except for a few things like, you know, interior build quality, paint finish, blah, 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 whatever. Anyway, the car did well. And then came the Putra, and the Putra was selling well. And then, you know, that slowly diminished. And then they came out with the Satria GTI R3.
Mm.
These cars did well and everything else. But something or other changed along the way. And Proton decided, no, we're not going to do all the special edition cars. Thank you very much. We'll go back to doing family cars. And then later, they woke up the R3 department, which was, you know, hiding the Satria GTI. And they started making the Preve and all with the R3. But it was just not as exciting because, A, not a two-door car, not a hot hatch, not nimble. You know, for me, it didn't work. But I know some people bought the cars and they were fine. Now, fast forward to a few years, about 6-7 years ago, I remember looking at a Satria GTI and the price was shockingly low, between 12 to 18,000 ringgit thereabouts, okay?
That's crazy.
It wasn't crazy because you must understand, that time Proton prices were not very high. And if you think about depreciation over a period of time, that was actually the right price for the car for that time. And you must remember, a lot of these cars were abused, very few were looked after, and it was a hot favorite with car thieves. Whether just for parts or for the whole car, you know, whether they want to take the rear spoiler or the rims or the Recaro seats, you had all this going on. I had friends who had spoilers stolen, seats stolen, the whole car stolen from inside their garage in a gated community. You know, this is how popular the cars were. And you'll never see the cars again. They will be stripped down and sold for parts or whatever else. Because why? You see today a lot of normal Satria 1.3 and 1.5s having a GTI conversion kit on it.
Mm.
And this is what they used to do. And some of them even have the engine. So let's put all that aside. People do what they do. So there was not much interest. And then suddenly, last year, 2020, I don't know why, people started talking about the Satria GTI. And then one guy, smart enough, said, okay, I'm going to buy a few and start doing them up. He took these cars in, he restored them nut and bolt, and put a price of 40,000-50,000 ringgit. Sold. just so. Mm. Because why? There were a lot of people who could not afford it in the good old days, like me, and now still cannot afford it, but there's others who now can afford it, said, I'm willing to pay 40, 45,000 ringgit for this car. So there came a new business. So he started a new business. Now, with his new business, getting some publicity online, some other people said, hey, this is a good way to make some money, you know? So the prices of the Satra GTI started going up. And they went up to 20, 25, 30,000 ringgit
yeah.
in the last 1 year. And these were cars probably just flipped over a year, you know? And then another person has come into the game. And he now has 7 Satria GTIs, all restored, repainted as much as possible, what is broken, damaged or whatever, replaced. And he's selling for between 40 to 50,000 ringgit. And he's got people interested.
Wow.
And you must remember, these cars, you're buying cash, huh?
Mm.
Okay? So I went to see both dealers. I went to visit them, have a look at the cars. And, you know, yes, nice cars. Some little bit of emotion was tugging at one corner of my heart. But then, you know, because I've had a heart attack before, I said, no. I'm not going to pay this kind of money for this car. Because I can't imagine a car that was 68,000 when it was new. A Proton. You know, I'm sorry, I'm going to use the word the Proton. You know, I mean, yes, Lotus handling, that's about it. And then now it's almost 50,000 ringgit. Come on, doesn't make sense.
But it's kind of the myth that came around the Satria GTI in recent years, right? People thought that it was probably the best Proton to have ever come out of Proton in the last 30 years.
True. I mean, at that point, yes. But personally, I thought, you know, it was a nice car, but it wasn't a great car. Why I say it wasn't a great car was because, okay, you had the handling, you had the engine power delivery for its time, but everything else wasn't of high quality. I'm not talking about German quality or French quality or Swedish quality. It wasn't on par with the Japanese cars. You know, plastics, roof lining, carpet, you know, dashboard, fit and finish. It just wasn't there.
Mm.
And this is the thing. I'm not going to pay so much money for something like that. So when I was, you know, talking to some friends who were, you know, eagerly waiting to take out 40, 45,000 ringgit to buy one of these cars, I just did a little bit of research. And then by luck, I stumbled upon a Mitsubishi Mirage. Now, I know when I put up this article, a lot of people came and told me, Mirage, that one not iconic. That one is not a specialist car. No, but I'm just comparing apple to apple, okay? Now, the Mitsubishi Mirage Turbo, there was a turbo and non-turbo. These cars came out before the Satra GTI. Now, when they came out, of course, Mitsubishi Malaysia didn't bring them in. These were all brought in by AP holders. There was a time you could see a few around KL and PGA, but now to spot one is so difficult. I think most of them have just, you know, maybe had an accident or, you know, just rotted away. I don't know. But these cars were well built, well put together, and they had their own little appeal, you know. But this one for sale caught my eye simply because, A, he had shoehorned in a VR4 Mitsubishi Galant engine.
The cream of the crop of Mitsubishi engines.
Yes, and these were solid, well-built, strong, powerful engines. You know, 200 over brake horsepower, bags of torque. And this engine was built for a four-wheel drive Galant. Now you put it in a Mirage, which is, you know, a baby Galantla, you know?
Yep.
Hatchback. You keep it two-wheel drive. Okay, he's got an automatic gearbox because he wants to use it every day. But if you are stubborn, you still want to go and play with a manual, you can remove that. Getting a manual gearbox, five-speed, no issue. It'll slot in beautifully. And can you imagine the bags of power, the, you know, the traction, the fun you can have with this car? And the interior build quality is way better than the Proton Satra GTI. I know a lot of people are going to be upset with me. I am telling fact, you know, because why? It's like it is.
Yep.
Now, this Mitsubishi is going for about 38,000 ringgit with all the work done on it. And I think it's bang for your buck when you compare to what the Satra is giving you at 45 to 50,000 ringgit. But if you want an iconic car, then stay with the Satra GTI.
Ooh.
It's a battle between your brains and your heart, isn't it?
Yeah, and also, you know, nobody's going to steal the Mitsubishi. You know, it's almost like a sleeper hot hatch, you know?
I guess so. But I feel like the Satria GTI, you know, because it's 15 years old now.
Yes.
It's come to a point where it doesn't matter to me that it's cheap. You know, the story of the Satria GTI just seems to grow. The fact that, you know, the car was sent to Lotus in the UK and they did their thing and then impressed people all over the world, mainly because, you know, it was a different package than what you got from a hot hatch at the time.
Yes.
From a random unknown brand in Proton to be called a better car than the Peugeot 206 GTI, that was quite a big thing to shout about at the time as well.
And you know what stands out for it for me is When I first moved here, a friend of mine had one of these.
Okay.
And they have a very specific sound, I think.
Oh, you that's know, the exhaust sound. Yes, correct.
Yeah, yeah. Specifically the Satria GTI. I could tell it from a mile away. There was two or three in my neighborhood, and I knew immediately what it was.
And it had rectangular tailpipes as well, right?
Yeah.
Super iconic car.
Interesting stuff.
I guess in some way you are kind of right, Daniel, because Mitsubishi Mirage, especially with that VR4 engine, that, if I'm not mistaken, the VR4 engine survived through many of Mitsubishi's strongest rally years.
Exactly, you know? Right. But I mean, again, this is, you know, when you talk about, you know, the Satria GTI, the Satria, the tale of two knights, you know?
Yes.
Satria is knight, you know? So, you know, whether you want to go for the original knight from Japan or you want to go for the Malaysian knight.
Yep, yep.
This is purely an emotional thing. You know, like when I spoke to my friends about, you know, looking at this Mitsubishi, they said, no, I want a Satria GTI.
Yeah.
And they got money, so go ahead.
Fair enough.
Whether or not you're keeping that money in your pocket or spending it on something is something to hold on to. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, yet another Satria. Satria Neo. That's all coming up here on Cruise Control on BFM 89.9.
Bombing frustrated minds. BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, the business station. This is Cruise Control. We're into the third and final part of the show. It's been a tale so far of one Satria and one Mitsubishi. The Satria GTI or a Mitsubishi Mirage Turbo. That was just before the break. Of course, at the top of the show, we're talking about how much of a pain in the whatever it is to renew your driving license, the BMW i6, and a little bit about accelerating EV usage here in Malaysia. But of course, the thrust of today's show is the tale of two Satrias. Daniel has had his pedestal. It's now time for Arif to have his with the Satria Neo. Arif, what is it about this car that you love?
That, I think, is a little bit hard to explain.
Well, you've got a radio show. It's your job. Get on with it.
You know, just going off the discussion about the Satria GTI and how a lot of Malaysian car enthusiasts were kind of tickled by the idea of the Satria, you know, small, sporty, super fast and impressive, despite all the clear, very clear drawbacks in quality. But you look at this new Satria Neo, and it first came out in 2006. And honestly, I think it was quite a positive departure in terms of design from that iconic Satria Mitsubishi Mirage sort of look. There was something classic Civic hatchback about the old one, you know, small, tiny wheels with and small, tiny tires with big windows, and that fairly standard Japanese three-door hatchback body style. And throughout the years, that sort of look had changed, and I think it made it better looking than the Mirage was based on.
Yeah, I think so.
I'm sorry, this car just doesn't do it for me. No, I'm hearing you talk about it, and I'm thinking, you know, maybe age group.
He's already tuned out. He's already gone.
It's very clear an age group thing. I'll get to why later, but, you know, as a 10-year-old, 12-year-old at the time, the Proton Satria Neo represented the best Proton designs to me. To me.
We have to factor into the fact that you were 10 or 12 years old, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay,
can I just jump in here a little bit? Okay.
Yeah.
To me, the older guy, to me, honestly, okay, let's not comment about this car design, but the Putra was so much nicer.
Yeah, but they never made a new one. That's the problem.
They never made a new one because it still looks so nice today. I'd rather take that over this. Anyway, continue, please. Continue.
You know, there was a point where cars needed to be relevant to the younger audience. And to be fair to the Satria Neo, no matter how honestly garbage it was, it did represent a small part of the Malaysian youth that was really into cars, really into sportiness, and wanted a car that looked like it expressed themselves. It was far less restrained than all the other Proton models, which were the Wajah, the Gen 2, the Arena, and I think the Wira was even on sale at the time. I think at the time also, Proton was promoting everything, every one of their cars with, this car is really good ASEAN NCAP rating. And it was all just marketing dribble because the NCAP ratings were 3 stars at best. But when they sold the Neo, it wasn't really about that. It was about being sporty, you know, the spirit of the GTI. And I thought, you know, it had a quite cohesive design, clean lines, sporty cues. As a stock version in 2006, it even had flared arches, which looked probably odd at the time. I think it's grown into it after 15 years or so. It looked nimbler and I think more appealing than the old one, which started to look a bit visually heavy. Then in 2009, Proson launched a better-looking CPS model by sticking bolt-on arches and aggressive bumpers as a tribute to the Satria GTI. And personally, I think the interior, visually, it was quite great to look at because I don't think I saw any other car in our market that wore quite a sporty aesthetic like this. It had bolstered sport seats, semi-bucket, I guess you could say. It had a chunky three-spoke steering wheel, a pair of promising blue dials with a speedo that read up to 240 kilometers an hour, which in a Proson is like, wow. To add to the sportiness, if you look elsewhere in the car, visually again, you had these pretty cool aircon vents with geared surrounds that adjusted the airflow. You had three simple knobs for the HVAC and a stick and ball gear shifter for your manual cars with some rivets drilled around the base.
Blaupunkt system inside as well, I think.
Blaupunkt system. Mm. That was something that my friends who owned the car pointed out, even though the sound system was pretty bad. But the fact that you had a Blaupunkt sitting in your car... Yeah, was something, wasn't it?
But the Blaupunkt was made in Butterworth. Eh?
Stop spoiling it. Let him just relive his memories.
Made in Germany, eh?
Daniel, we have to be positive. It's a Merdeka special.
No, I'm being positive. Made in Malaysia, you know, local transfer of technology and everything else.
It had tiger eye headlights. Come on.
Yes, yes, yes.
So visually, again, at first glance, visually, all is well and stays pretty well with the new. Mm. Visually.
Mm.
But as usual with Protons, you know, things start to take a sharp turn when you take a closer look, and particularly at the interior. As mentioned just now by Daniel, the 2003-2002 GTIs, no matter how awesome they were as cars, no matter how much people love them as cars, interior quality was rubbish, and this new Neo was going to be exactly that. Everything short of spectacular, and because most of them came out in gray or 50 shades of gray, they were particularly depressing places to be in. And all the promise that showed, you know, in the design of the interior suddenly fell apart. The door cards, for example, cheap hollow plastic, the kind that scratches and fades in due time. And if you spill some curry on it, it stays, you know, stained.
Forever.
Those wonderfully designed aircon vents that I talked about, cheap plastic, you could pull it off and bend it around and stick it back on. Those cool three knobs that control the HVAC, rattly, cheap. The cool looking riveted gear shifter, all made of plastic and not even riveted. You could pull it off with your hands. The steering wheel, wonderful leather, they said, but it fades very quickly, and even when brand new, it was not the same shade of gray.
Guys, hold on. Sorry to interrupt. There's a lawsuit coming in now.
I'm sorry, Prosam, but it gets better.
How is going to turn this around? This should be interesting.
Just a few more that was interesting about the Satria Neo, because I'm 5'7", and obviously you guys have seen the car. It's small. It's hilariously small. And if you are anything above 5'7", or at least 5'5", or slightly big around the middle section, you are not going to fit in the car. Richard, you're about 6 foot tall, aren't you?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
You would have to tilt your head to drive the car. I'm 5'7", and when I use the sun visor in the car, I not only block out the sun, but also half of the car in front of me. So... interesting there. Rear seats, obviously, is a tiny car. And the boot as well is quite tiny. But you get the feeling that if you ditch the rear seats, you kind of get a cool sort of two-seater hatchback with decent cargo space. So that's interesting. And then there's the biggest complaint about this car, which a lot of the owners could not stop harping about, which forced Proton to really think about NVH, noise, sound deadening, and vibration. So... every panel in the car, as I mentioned, feels hollow. The road and wind and tire noise was deafening. Anything above 100 kilometers an hour, you're basically, you know, on a speedboat. Not even the fancy Blaupunkt audio unit could drown all of this out. And then finally, just the last final point, the engine. You know, a lot of people have been talking about the early Campro engines. They were known for being really thirsty, very noisy, gutless, had a nasty torque dip in the rev range, but... some of the power was in the mid to top end, so in some ways it was quite fun. It had about 110 horsepower, 150 newton meters of torque, 10.5 second sprint, which is not too bad for such an, you know, an underpowered car like this. The R3 and the Lotus versions and the CPS models, they had slight tweaks and little performance bit, but the original 1.6 engines were just poor in that respect.
Mm.
But that was a pretty unique high point for the Neo that I think made it very fondly remembered amongst the youths in Malaysia. For starters, the driving position, pretty spot on, very easy to get comfy if you ignore all the quality issues. You get a decent view out, despite the A-pillar being slightly in the way. It feels kind of cozy, sort of, you know, the other side of the door is an arm's length reach away. The steering wheel, nicely weighted like all Protons are and were. It was also quite sharp, very confident turning, so it was very, very fun to drive. And then there's the ride and the handling, which at the time as well, Proton was going off about their Lotus-tuned handling in the GTI. And the same sort of thing happened here. Lotus had their hand in the suspension and the ride and handling. So it rode really, really great. It was one of the main points that I think differentiated this car amongst all the other Protons. Because, I don't know, I've spoken to a lot of my friends who owned this car at the time. And all of them seem to say that it just feels more stable than any other 50,000 ringgit car at the time. You could do 100, 110, 120, 140, 160. You'd lose your hearing, but you'd be stuck on the ground.
And you'd have a really nice samurai sword handbrake.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't see many cars with those anymore.
No, mainly because it's not friendly to use.
Because the law says you're not allowed to carry a sharp object in your car.
But I think the best, just going on the ride again, feel stable, rooted to the ground at higher speeds, cornering flat and easy. And the best part is because the engine is so slow, you can actually throw it into corners and drive it quite fearlessly and still come out the other side alive because you felt safe, secure, and in control all the time. There's no such thing as, oversteer or liftoff oversteer there was, but it was hard to reach that edge as a teenager. I felt that's where the fun of the car was because, like I said, the engine, mid to top in the rev range, you get all your torque and all your power. And it sort of drives like an old slow sports car where momentum is the name of the game. You got to keep the car in the higher revs. You got to learn how the car reacts as it goes through the corner. You got to be one with the car, as they used to say.
Keep it on the boil. Keep the engine on the boil.
Yeah. It teaches you how to, enter corners, make sure that when you're on exit, you're in the right rev range to shoot out of it. That's what the Neo was all about. And even if you weren't a car enthusiast, you would really feel that because you had to rev the engine out anyway to get anywhere. So to me, it was one of the cars that you could really zone in and have a really good time on the back roads at pretty reasonable speeds. And with all the unmuffled cabin noise, all the rattling and all the cheapness inside the car, the buzzing of the engine, and all the sounds of the stones hitting the wheel arches and the bodywork, it felt like a race car. It felt like a car that was meant to be on the track rather than out on the roads. And to be fair, it did so pretty successfully. In 2007 all the way to 2013, the Neo was the winner of several races in the Intercontinental Rally Challenge with the famous yellow S2000 Satria Neo. Then you had Karamjit Singh, who won many, many races with this car in the APRC as well. And at one time, it was a junior rally car for the Asian Rally Championships as well. But like I said, there was a certain connection with the Malaysian youth for this. It was proudly advertised to the Malaysian youth when the car was launched. It was supposed to be sporty. It was supposed to be young, supposed to embody the kind of Malaysian youth experience, whatever that was. So teenagers and college university students like me at the time, which was about 2011, 2010, we had just seen the CPS. And with all those big body kits, we knew all about the rubbish engine and the rubbish quality, but we didn't care. Because to us, it was more than just another $3 Proton hatchback or just another Proton. It's not a Myvi. It's not boring and looks like your mom's car or something like that. This is something that you owned. And all of this flaws that we mentioned about the quality, about the lack of refinement in terms of the design, made it lovable in a way. It reflected the kind of individuality, the freedom, the youthful enthusiasm that we found as students living on campus in university in Malaysia at the time, far away from home. There's no such thing as a curfew anymore. You are free to spend your parents' money as you like.
Hey, hello. I've got a son going to university. I don't want to hear this, huh? Spend your parents' money as you like. What nonsense is that?
I'm sorry, but that's what happens. That is just what happens.
I'm going to call your father after this.
He knows all of this. But, that was the sort of spirit that you had. And I'm sure you guys, when you went to university, you got your first car, you were so excited to get into it and to go anywhere, to do things with your new friends and to experience new things, right? Like you said, Daniel, a long time ago, your first car was a
Mazda Capella Rotary.
Then you told us that you, you know, souped it out, basically raced it around town, right?
Yes, but with my own money.
Times have changed. Inflation is a very serious thing.
Yeah. Anyway, coming back to your Satrani, I agree quite a lot with what you say in terms of, you know, the driving, the excitement, the dynamics. I mean, I remember taking this car around the Proton test track and I said, wow. Apart from all the other things about build quality, this car drove beautifully. I mean, this was a car that said hot hatch, you know?
Yeah.
But you see, the thing is now, look at it today. Today, you can buy this car, I mean, from as low as 15,000 ringgit. And it's not that old, 2009 model, 15,000 ringgit. And, you know, as high as 23,000, only 23,000 for the last batch new R3, you know?
And that's totally fair, I think.
It's a fair price. It's a fair price. Because why? You've got to spend 10,000 redoing the interior, NVH, everything else.
Yep.
You know? But is this better or is this on par with buying a Satria GTI?
Definitely not. But here's the kicker, right? People have certain attachments to cars in their past. And I'm sure a lot of people, if they had the money and if they were interested enough, they would pick up a Satria Neo just for a track day or pick it up just as like a memento of their, you know, of their past. That's what car people do.
Right.
And I totally agree. It's absolutely hopeless. You should not buy a secondhand Satria Neo unless you were willing to spend 20 grand fixing it up and throwing away the engine and putting the old Mitsubishi engine in. Mm. You know, I was wondering about that. I asked one of my colleagues, Sabrina, she does videos for the video team here at BFM. She owns a Satria Neo and her brother is a Satria Neo enthusiast. And I asked him about all of this and he said, essentially, the Campro engine, hugely unreliable. And no matter what modifications you throw at it, you're just going to end up spending more money than you get back.
So
don't buy one. Having said that, the simple idea of the Satria Neo, you know, the individuality, that youthfulness, I think Malaysian youths, we need that car back. We need that sort of car again because the Axia is not going to do it. The Myvi is a Myvi and the X50 just feels like...
too old.
It's a late 20-year-old car who's, you know, helplessly clinging on to the last shred of their 20s. The Neo is something for the youth. It's something that they can break and enjoy and, you know, get stranded at the side of the road for a couple hours because they're so far in the forest. But I only have one wish. I think, you know, in 5 years, especially with Proton, you know, that they've got that timeline where they're going to start designing their old cars in 5 years. And coupled with, you know, the Geely powertrains that are very impressive and their chassis, which they're taking racing at this time, it could be quite a good opportunity for Proton to maybe bring back some sort of car like this that appeals to the youth. Because as evident by cars like the GR Yaris and the return of many significant sports cars like we've spoken about in the past, like the Nissan Z, the Toyota Supra, demand for these well-executed, simple, functional, enthusiast cars is there. You just have to make it right. And with the help of Geely and Volvo's, you know, technology sharing and platform sharing, it could be a good thing to have in 5 years' time.
Are you saying we need a new Neo?
Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah. So what do you guys think of that?
Go on, Daniel. What's your opinion?
Just bring back the Putra. I don't know. I just love the Putra.
Me too. The Neo or the Putra. Any of those that can make us feel young again.
Yeah, because with the Putra, I can straight away play with a lot of Mitsubishi engines. I don't have to think about expensive Campro or Geely engines. No? That's just me, you know, talking from, you know, a person who doesn't want to waste our parents' money, you know, go university.
Well, on that note.
Yes, on that note.
On that note, people spending other people's money, we should probably wrap up for today's show. Great commentary there, guys. I mean, obviously, I've never owned a Satria and probably never will by the sound of things, especially not a Satria Neo.
Good news.
But, you know, I'm riveted by that whole story. Interesting how you both got this kind of, it's almost like a love-hate affair with these vehicles, you know, these two in particular. And it got me thinking about, you know, what would be that car in my mind, like Arif has in his mind, you know, that car when I first went to uni or whatever. And thinking back, it would have been something like, a Ford Fiesta or something ridiculous.
Or a Volkswagen Golf GTI Mark II.
Or a Volkswagen, yeah, that's correct. Yeah, Volkswagen Golf GTI, yeah.
Or a Vauxhall Corsa.
Yeah, plenty of my friends in the UK had Renault Clios as well.
Renault Clio, yeah.
I think Richard's time will have to be the Renault 5 GT.
Yes. You know what? There's something about those still.
Yeah.
Ugly but functional and fast. Yes. Right. We're going to wrap up, ladies and gents. Thank you very much for tuning in this evening, of course. We started off the show with a whole bunch of news about renewing your driving license or whether or not you can and can't do that. The BMW i6 and moving on with trying to get the nation electrified, at least so you can run your car. And then a tale of two Satrias. Please have a listen back at that. Fascinating stuff. And if you miss any part of this show, don't forget you can download the podcast wherever you normally get it from. We recommend the BFM app. It's available in the Apple App Store or Google Play. On behalf of Arif Ruse, the man with the news, and Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my, I'm Richard Bradbury. This has been Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.